Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Fourth and final hour. Darren, Donick, and Jace on this Monday afternoon. We're live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Next door, Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Maple Leafs tonight here in Bridgestone Arena. I will have a pregame for you starting at 6 o'clock, puck drop at 7, everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Let's head west. Let's check in Memphis. Eric Hasseltine is the fine play-by-play voice on radio for the Grizzlies. He now joins us. Eric, how you doing?
I'm great. I'd be better if I was getting ready to go to the Preds game like you guys. I'd love to be up there right now.
It is going to be a fun night in the building. Both teams are coming back from their break, and there's going to be a lot of hockey the rest of the way. So Predators have played the least amount of games thus far in the league, so they're going to have to do some making up, and schedule's going to get compact the rest of the way. You know all about an 82-game schedule, so
yeah.
You know all about that.
Yeah, it's weird how that works out in both leagues, huh? Where, like, some teams have played more and the other teams have played fewer. Like, I think I looked at our schedule, and we had played some of the most games early on, too, and so it was. It's weird how that works sometimes, but in the end, you all play 82, and you all end on the same day, right?
No, no doubt about it. Last night, you guys were at the FedEx Forum. The Grizzlies were hosting the Suns, and let's just start with, where were you when you found out the news, and what was your reaction?
I can tell you exactly where I was. Just standing in my bathroom. I had my 8-year-old with me, my son. We had just finished up playing catch on the front yard. He's getting ready for his baseball season to come around, and I want to make sure he's as ready to go as possible. So we've been throwing the ball around, swinging the bat, and, you know, trying to have that time with him during the basketball season. It's really special to me. So I had kind of gotten him ready to go to the game with me, and I was in my bathroom getting ready, and we have a group text amongst those of us that work with the Grizzlies, and one of the PR directors sent the TMZ story, and the first thought was, please let this just be someone who's got incredibly poor taste a night after LeBron James passed Kobe on the scoring list, albeit in Philadelphia, and that this is completely inaccurate. And I think that was every man in that and woman in that text thread's reaction, like, please let this not be true. And unfortunately, we all know now that it was true. And we all know that we all kind of dug in and found out that that was the case. My first reaction to it, guys, was to call my friends that are in the Laker organization, people that had been there that are no longer there. And one of them in Southern California expressed to me that he was shocked that they allowed the helicopter to even take off, that it had been a really foggy day. And so it was really hard. And I didn't know Kobe personally. I had some interactions with him, but I had a tremendous amount of respect for the player he was and for the, you know, for what he did to revamp his image after a very difficult time in his own personal life years ago, as we all know, and to become the father that he had become. I was impressed. And so the second thought I had was, I really hope this doesn't get worse before it gets better. And it gets better with sharing memories and healing talks with people. It gets worse if you find out there were more people involved, and as we all know, it unfortunately got worse.
For all the teams that had to play yesterday, there's no planning, and you know, it's something that's got to be put together pretty much on the fly or pretty quickly. I thought it was nice to look around the league and see the tributes that were going on from players, coaches, play-by-play guys like yourself, just, you know, people out there. You had to work that night. It's, you know, you get hit with this, and now you have to figure out a way to work that in. What took place, since we're talking to you, what took place at FedEx last night around the news?
Well, I arrived at the arena, as I typically do, about 2.5 hours prior to the game, and got to the spot where Coach Jenkins, our new head coach, does his pregame media availability. Our television crew goes first, and then our media scrum for all the rest of the media, and then I get to talk to Coach Jenkins solo for our pregame interview. Walking through the arena, I ran into our television play-by-play voice, Pete Pranica. We just kind of shook our heads and, you know, basically I asked, okay, what's your guys' plan? Because I had formulated on the drive in what I thought we should do, but I needed to clear it with everybody and make sure. And my thought was, you know, ask Coach Jenkins prior to the interview beginning, like, how do you want to handle this? Do you want to focus on the game? Do you want to say something? When do you want to say it? Let him tell me what was best for him. For our pregame interviews, we have a segment we call Grizz Files, where we kind of dive in like an in-your-own-words segment with our players, coaches, some legends like we just had in town. And we scrapped that, and I had Brevin Knight, who's our television analyst who played in the league, and Elliot Perry, who's our radio analyst who played in the league, come on for about 2 minutes and talked with them basically back-to-back about their memories and their experiences with Kobe from a player's perspective. While I was in with Coach Jenkins, both teams were communicating through the locker room to figure out what they wanted to do. We had all seen what happened in San Antonio, which was amazing. And the Suns and Grizzlies came up with the idea that since he wore two numbers and they happened to be 24, the amount of seconds in the shot clock, and 8, the amount of seconds you have to get it across the timeline, that whoever won the tap would take a 24-second violation, and the team that got the ball off the turnover would then reciprocate with an 8-second violation. So I thought that was incredibly thoughtful and a wonderful tribute. And our coach said, I would rather just address it right away. And then, you know, our players were hurting. So we kind of let them be. And they did that in San Antonio, and we agreed to all do that as well. So it was hard. I'm the first one to tell you, I don't deal with these things real well. I kind of wear my emotions on my sleeve. And even though it's not somebody I knew really intensely, I did know him a little bit and had interactions with him. My favorite story about that is that was one of the last buildings where we sat courtside. And so for, you know, the 15 years I've done this, up until he retired, it was 11 seasons where he would walk right by me. And I had a stats guy that lives in L.A. that's a good friend of mine, and he would do my in-game stats for Laker games. And Kobe would fist bump the four courtside ticket holders next to us. He would skip us and then fist bump the rest of the table. And every time, my stat guy would hold out his fist, and Kobe would look at him and kind of sneer and snarl and walk by, because you were on the opposition. And the last year he played, in the last game that we were there, he fist bumped the guy and gave him a wink, like, I have seen you for years, and I'm going to do this. And I thought that was just an incredible, incredibly funny, yet, you know, just touching thing to say. Hey, I competed against you, and for years I wasn't going to give you the time of day, but, you know, now that I'm walking out the door, I appreciate that you wanted to, you know, that you wanted to fist bump me because of what I've done. And so I started formulating stories like that and trying to just figure out a way to kind of hold it together as best we could, and then get to what we had to do, which was play the game. And I thought it was incredibly ironic that there were 8 games on the schedule, and that, you know, you add up all these numbers, guys that were close to him, Trevor Booker and Trae Young combined for 81 points. They each took 24 shots. I mean, these are just these things that just happen that are so coincidental and just bizarre. But, you know, someone asked me if I thought the league should cancel the games, and I said the last thing in my mind that I would think Kobe Bryant would have wanted was people to stop doing what he loved to do. And then you factor in having to cancel 8 games and make those back up, and it was just on the fly. It would have been so difficult for the league to do that moving forward. And I thought all the coaches handled it brilliantly by giving a lot of players the option. If you cannot do this, and we understand everybody deals with grief differently, then, you know, you can sit out. No one will question it. No one will judge it. But I think I think Kyrie sat out, but to a man, most guys played. Devin Booker was in tears before the game, in our game. And that guy is as tough and as mean and as nasty a trash talker as I've seen. And this guy was just broken down. And he came out and had a hell of a game. And so, you know, I know I'm kind of rambling because I'm trying to think of the right thing to say, and I just don't think there ever is a right thing to say in this moment. This was not something anybody expected. And I think it's crazy. I've been hearing all the comparisons to when Prince passed away and when Michael Jackson passed away. I think we have a stronger connection to athletes because of the television coverage of when they perform. We don't see musicians' concerts. And when we go to a concert, we can't get that close. You can get so close to professional athletes, hockey players, baseball players, basketball and football, that you almost feel like you know them. I was a huge fan of the band Rush. I had no idea that Neil Peart had brain cancer or that was battling any illness whatsoever, but I loved his music. I didn't feel that connection. I didn't know Kobe Bryant all that well other than to have interviewed him a couple of times in scrums, but I felt a connection to him because you could see him and reach out and touch him more so than a musician. So to me, it seems like that's why this resonates so deeply. And this was a guy who possessed every quality of what you need to have to be great, a fearlessness, a mentality of hard work and a dedication to his craft that exceeded just about everybody else's.
Eric Hasseltine is the radio voice of the Memphis Grizzlies. We're reflecting on the death of Kobe Bryant. And Eric, if my timeline's right, I can remember when the Grizzlies first became a good team with Jerry West and
yeah.
Some of the, that's when Kobe was in his prime. What was it like when would come through town? Like, what was it different? Like, it's always different when the great ones come through, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to be honest, it was maddening because you showed up to your building and there were, you know, Laker-clad fans everywhere. They're not always the most polite of human beings. They like to let you know how many championships they've won. And they would buy up tickets. It's a lot like you guys have seen with the bell cow franchises in every sport, whether it's the NHL or, you know, I think there's more territorialism in the National Hockey League from what I've seen, the arenas I've been in. But you go to an NFL game and when it's a Steelers or Cowboys game and there's fans everywhere. And then on top of that, this guy was going out to embarrass your team and do everything he could to embarrass your team. And there were just times I remember calling games where the Grizzlies were riding a wave of emotion or just, you know, absolutely playing at another level because of the intensity brought by playing not only the Lakers but Kobe. And then you would just almost see this twitch in him, like a switch just went on. And he said, okay, I've had enough of this. Now I'm going to show you what greatness is all about. And you just kind of in your head just went, here we go. Here comes Kobe. And, you know, from dropping 60 on the Grizzlies in three quarters to a game in L.A. where he was so angry that Mike Miller had blocked his shot and that he didn't get a foul and that he ended up literally throat-chopping Mike Miller, to which he apologized for after the game. But the intensity. And so when you got ready for those games, I have my own way of doing my charts and I do in each individual players, and I would just always roll my eyes at the numbers and how good the guy was. And you look at him and you're like, how is this guy? He's not physically imposing like LeBron James. Yes, he could jump out of the gym when he was 18, 20. You know, he had those special athletic gifts, but not like other guys did per se. He wasn't the fastest guy, but you'd see him jab step and fade away, and that ball would float in the air, and you had no doubt that it was going in. And when it went and it didn't go in, it almost left you speechless. So it was hard because you knew you were in for a really long night. And even when they didn't have great players around him at the end, you knew if Kobe got into that Kobe mode, and it wouldn't come as often as it did when he was in his late 20s, early 30s, but it still could come, you were in trouble. And there was just nothing you could do. And so, you know, you look at his numbers, and the thing that popped out to me, guys, is this guy only won one MVP, and he could have won, in my opinion, at least five, if not eight or nine, the years he had. There were just other great stars there. But the whole time, I don't ever recall hearing him complain about that. I don't ever recall hearing him, you know, go to the press and go, this is ridiculous, I should be the MVP. He would just quietly say, okay, well, you're just giving me more reason to go back in the gym and work even harder. You're just giving me more opportunity to prove you guys wrong when I do win one, or when I win number two, or when I win another championship. Oh, you think I can't win a title without Shaquille O'Neal? Let's go find out. You know, even at a point where he admitted that he was frustrated and he thought about being traded from the Lakers, which he said took a lot for him to admit, when they went and made a deal, he said, all right, then let me lead these guys and see what we can do. And so I think we haven't seen a lot of competitors like that in our lifetime. I think you talk about the Michael Jordans, the Kobe Bryants, even the Larry Birds, guys like that, the Magic Johnsons. they had that competitive drive. A lot of people have criticized LeBron for not having it. I think he does have it. I just think he expresses it differently. And the stories are legendary of rookies coming into the Lakers and going, hey, I want to work out with you, Kobe. I want to be with you, you know, on a day-to-day basis. Teach me the ropes. And he would look at him and say, I don't think you want to do that. I don't think that that's what you're about. I don't think you want to get to the gym at 5 a.m., and it's nothing against you, but I'm not here to go work out for 2 hours and then on an off day go down to the beach and try to pick up girls. I'm going to stay in the gym until I literally can't shoot anymore, or I feel like I'm wiped out. I've given everything I have, and then I might go back later and try to do it again. He was, you know, fairly reclusive from what I heard at times, and he was a guy that you know, I think he liked the spotlight, but I think he also liked time away. I mean, some of the most notable stories in Memphis are of him going to St. Jude without any fanfare whatsoever, going to visit kids stricken with life-threatening diseases and just being there because when he walked in a room, it stopped. I mean, you're like, oh, my gosh, there's Kobe Bryant. And that, for a kid that's going through that, could mean the world. And he didn't want people to, you know, pat him on the back for doing that. He just felt like if he could help, he would do it. And I had a lot of respect for that.
Eric Hasseltine is with us, radio voice for the Memphis Grizzlies here on Darren Donick and Chase. And we started this off, Eric, talking about tributes that, you know, you guys did there in Memphis and other teams, and we know more will be coming. But when you look at legacy and how you honor him forever and ever, how would you do it? Do you retire his number across the league? I mean, that's been a debate with Jordan on whether it should be done. What do you think the proper way to honor Kobe Bryant moving forward will be?
See, and that's a really tough question, and I may sound a little hard or calloused about this when I come up with my answer. I think Major League Baseball retiring the number 42, we all know why. What Jackie Robinson went through makes all of us cringe and think back and just go, how could we be so stupid? And as great as Kobe was, that's not what he went through. As great as Michael was, that's not what they went through. And to me, those guys would want their jerseys, I think, retired by their teams, but not by the whole league. I mean, yeah, it's an ultimate sign of respect, but, you know, those guys value the next generation carrying the torch and taking the league a step ahead of where they were, the way they did. I mean, we haven't retired Bill Russell's number 6. If we start retiring the all-time greats throughout, I mean, what's next? And then we're going to retire 23, and LeBron, who's it going to be for, LeBron or Michael? I think the individual teams do that, and I know there's a reporter up there that had a big issue with something about the Grizzlies retiring Zach Randolph, to which I said, well, you know, to us in Memphis, that's a guy who we don't want to see somebody else wear number 50. Number 50 to us in a Grizzly uniform will always be Zach Randolph. And the numbers he put up and the things he helped this team do didn't necessarily result in championships, but that's important to us. The number 9 is important to us for Tony Allen. Just like in San Antonio, Avery Johnson's never going in the Hall of Fame, but his number 6 is hanging in the rafters of the San Antonio Spurs. And he didn't even play his whole career there. But he meant that much to that group. And Bruce Bowen the same way. So to me, I always think it's a team-based thing. I think I would rather see guys like that, especially in the situation where the life is lost tragically, just every arena either have a KB, a 2-4 up there, but you still wear the numbers and move forward with the thought that I believe Kobe would like to see people carry on the legacy of his number, not necessarily in Los Angeles where he has 2 retired, but for other teams, you know, to be a kid, if you were a kid and saw the highlights, and you know, the guys in the league right now, this was their guy. You know, I look at our average age of 24. They were at that average age would have been 11, 12 when he was right in the prime of it and when he was killing people. And these are the guys that at 11, 12 years old saw Kobe Bryant and probably said, hey, I want to do that. You know, you don't get that when you're 8, 9, 10. You may love the game, but you don't really have that grasp of who the players are. Until you're, I think, into your 10, 11, 12, that's where, as much as I love Dr. J, that's where I didn't really realize how great he was until I was 10 or 11, and then I saw highlights, and then he was still playing at that time, and then Michael Jordan came along right after. But, you know, these guys, that's their guy. The next generation is going to be LeBron. But the thing these guys have now is they have the ability to go back and watch the old highlights, unlike we did when we were growing up, or we did not have that chance. And so I think there's probably some six-year-old kid that today his dad is showing him the highlights of Kobe dropping 81 on the Toronto Raptors. And maybe he goes and wears a youth basketball 24 and wears it for the rest of his basketball playing career and ends up being the number one recruit in the country. And then you're going to get him to the NBA and say, oh, by the way, the guy that inspired you, you can't wear that number anymore. I don't necessarily agree with that.
I know you guys have a big game tomorrow night. You're hosting the Nuggets, but it'll be very interesting to see in the nightcap, the last game in the NBA tomorrow night at the Staples Center, Lakers and Clippers. So you know a lot of eyes will be on the Staples Center tomorrow night. Eric, good to talk to you as always. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Guys, anytime. Enjoy the Preds game. Good to see them back on the ice. And, yeah, tomorrow night certainly in L.A. going to be very, very interesting, and we'll talk soon. Thanks for having me.
No doubt about it. Eric Hasseltine is the play-by-play voice for the Grizzlies on radio, and we do appreciate him joining us. There is big news out of Los Angeles that's not involving basketball. It's actually on the football side of things and a quarterback. We'll tell you about what we're talking about on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. On this Monday afternoon, there's news out of Los Angeles. I teased that going into the break, that on the football side of things, there's news around a quarterback. And the Chargers have evidently, according to Jay Glazer, told Philip Rivers they are moving on from Philip Rivers. So Jay Glazer is saying that he is set to be a free agent this offseason.
Now, does he would officially not – he still wouldn't be able to be signed until the free agent period starts, right?
Correct.
But
– yes. Right, because that's not out there. It's not like they've released him today. Jay Glazer is just reporting that he's being told the Chargers – I mean, look – the writing was on the wall. We already knew this was coming last week when it was reported that he had picked up his family of 19 or whatever the number is. And he has 9 or 10 kids. That's not an exaggeration. He's got a large family that they were moving to Florida permanently. That's going to be their new residence. So, I mean, we knew then, right, when that came out, like, okay, he's not obviously going to play for the Chargers next season. He's going to move to Florida. But now this is making it really kind of official, but not official. I mean, Jay Glazer's broke a lot of stories. I believe Jay Glazer. If Jay Glazer is saying Philip Rivers and the Chargers are done, that relationship is over. Where is he gonna? Where, you know, now what's next?
Well, this is what I'm curious about, and we discussed this last week with the whole timeline of February 25th. I believe is the day. Between February 25th and March 10th, you have to decide on your franchise tag and or your transition tag. Is it possible? I mean, I'm guessing that the Titans don't really have any interest in Philip Rivers at the moment. But it's interesting that they're making it known, right? It's probably doing Philip Rivers a favor from his camp to be able to say, I want to let the league know that come free agency, I will be out there, right? I'm not going back there. If you want me, start thinking about it, because I'll be out there. Will we get a similar piece of news from Tom Brady? Because we were talking about the timeline. The Titans will have to decide on the franchise tag, if they want to use that, on Tannehill before they know, in theory, whether Tom Brady's even going to be out there or not.
Yeah.
But if the Patriots made a similar decision and basically set him free or let everybody know
they can't use the franchise tag. As a part of his agreement with his contract, they cannot use the franchise tag.
Right, but they could make an announcement to say that Tom Brady will not come back to the Patriots.
Right.
This is a new
era.
That's the whole thing we've been talking about is when people are like, you know, oh, he's not going. Well, you can't say that because if they wanted to put this to bed, they would have already put it to bed. Somebody. Whether it's Robert Kraft, whether it's Bill Belichick, whether it's Tom Brady.
But there could be mystery, right? They could keep their cards close to the vest.
Well, what's the mystery? If he's coming back, what?
No, I'm saying if he's not coming back.
Oh. Well, yeah,
the Titans need to know if he's not coming back. they don't need to know whether he's coming back.
Right.
But if they don't know, then they can't say, well, let's not worry about having Tannehill because we know Brady will be out there. They don't know if Brady is going to be out there.
And we talked about
this. They've got to deal with Tannehill before that with the franchise tag, et cetera.
We talked about this Thursday when you were out, Darren, and I admit it. I've kind of shifted my way of thinking because when we initially had this conversation, it was like, if Brady's available, yeah, you go for it. You go for Brady. I'm now putting Brady as more of the 1B. I believe that you try your best to get it done with Tannehill because you stick with what you know. He did a very good job for you. And if you look at the other parts of this, you want to keep some continuity, but you want to upgrade at the same time. It probably makes the most sense to stick with Tannehill, and I think that's their plan all along. I think that's what they want to do. But we'll know.
Well, what are you basing that on?
Well, they have said that it came out. I can't remember who it was that reported. I think it was Diana Russini that reported it, that they hadn't talked to Henry, but they had engaged in contact with Tannehill, and they wanted Tannehill back. I mean, that was out there towards the end of the season.
Right, but, I mean, that's without – you can't comment about anybody else because they're property of somebody else. So, yeah, but, I mean, there's – to what level is that conversation? I mean, it could just be simply a – hey, you know, we know.
Hey, what's up?
We'll be talking soon, you know. But that doesn't – I'm not disputing. I'm just saying we don't really know because until something is said that he's available, like kind of like this news right here, like this needs to – because to me, that is going to be – I'm going to be very curious because I'll just ask you guys without us knowing. Over there behind closed doors, if – let's say next week, Jay Glazer reports or whatever. It comes from WEEI. It gets out there. Tom Brady's out. Tom Brady's not coming back. And they know he's out on the market. What is their interest level, if any? Is it still Ryan Tannehill? Or is it, if they have to make the tough decision, if they had to literally talk about what we've been talking about, what do you think John Robinson and Mike Vrabel are saying, Amy Adams Strunk, what do you think they're saying of who they realistically, privately would want as their quarterback next year if he is available?
In theory, if the Patriots announced Tom Brady will not be back next year as a quarterback, and Tom Brady then makes an announcement, I am not retiring, are teams then free to call Tom Brady's camp and say, hey, we might be in the market for a quarterback, we might be interested in you. Are you interested?
Technically, no.
Technically, no.
Well, there's that window. Remember the
free window? Yeah, but that's not until.
But that's not until after the franchise tag has to be made by each team for presumably Tannehill. In other words, I'm just looking at a timeline that would have the Titans realistically being able to weigh one against the other if they wanted to, because they're going to have. If you want to keep the bird in hand, that negotiation is going to come way before you have a chance to even talk to Tom Brady legally.
Well,
right?
As you know, teams always wait until they can legally to talk behind the scenes.
Well, that's what I'm getting
at. That never goes on behind the scenes. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course. I mean, everybody does that.
Look,
we all know that goes on.
Mike Vrabel, Tom Brady just happened to run into each other at the Super Bowl, and hey, Tom, what's up? How you doing? Let's go get a drink. You know, let's go talk. I mean, sure, that could happen.
But the timeline,
I'm not saying
it makes it difficult. It makes you have to roll the dice. But it might be helpful if they were to make a similar announcement that the Chargers just made about Rivers.
Yeah.
And I don't know who's pushing that. I would guess that Rivers is probably just saying, hey, let's get it out there. I ain't coming back here.
Well, I'm sure it's his agent.
Let's get the phone calls going.
I'm sure
it's
his agent with Jay Glazer saying, like, hey, so you know, Phillip's out in Los Angeles, so if you want to go on and put that out there, feel free. I mean, it's not like the Chargers. If the Chargers wanted it out there, they would already be out there. It's probably coming from either Phillip Rivers or his agent.
Right. Are we convinced that Phillip Rivers is going to play next year?
I believe so. I would.
Because it's going to be as a starter. He's not going to go be a backup.
No, I mean, someone will make him their starter next year.
I think a lot of
people.
He'll
have a landing spot.
And I think some of this with Brady and Rivers probably is contingent upon what is Drew Brees going to do.
Quite honestly, him moving his family to Florida, he could realistically have three options in the state of Florida.
Tampa, Miami, Jacksonville?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's not like there's a closed book on any of those,
jobs. I mean, Miami is going to – they're going to either stick with what they have with Fitzmagic, or they're going to sign somebody to be the stopgap if they indeed draft Tua, like everybody thinks they're going
right.
to.
Right, and so they're going to need
sure.
somebody for a year. I mean, I would say probably Tampa 1, Miami. I don't know. Miami and Jacksonville. I don't know. What's Jacksonville's?
Well, they still have a financial commitment
how much
to Nick Foles.
I know.
And
but,
they have
but they
Minshew,
benched
who's
who well, they, they,
but
it
how
seems
much,
like they like him.
But how much do they like Minshew? That's
it
the
seems
question.
Like they
right.
like him.
I think they like him.
I think they like him. But I think anybody wow. in their right mind would choose Philip Rivers, would say Rivers is an upgrade over Minshew, right?
Yeah.
Well,
sure.
I don't know. I mean, do you think Minshew could be your quarterback for the next 5-6 years?
And do you believe? I think this is important. What I'm about to say, I think you have to look at Philip Rivers and go, okay, he's a competitor. He wants to play, but how is he going to affect what I have behind him? If you have Tua, if you have Minshew, if you're trying to develop what's next, we've had this conversation about Favre and Rodgers and their relationship, and there is nothing that says Philip Rivers has to go and be a mentor to the next guy. You're not asking him to do that, but at the same time, you don't want to create a volatile environment. You know what I mean? So I think that that's something you have to look at.
If you draft Tua, is to have him sit next year out?
I think it depends on his health.
You think that's the plan?
I think if he's
well,
if he's nowhere near 100%,
plan
no.
anymore. But the health could make it the plan.
Well, I don't.
Sure.
I mean, that's the easy answer if we know for sure. But what if he's like Jeffrey Simmons? If he is available at some point to come back, do you think an organization would just rather him sit, or do you think they would rather him be out there playing the minute he's made available?
And if so, then why would Philip Rivers really want to go there? Like,
exactly.
Yeah, right, exactly.
He would ideally want to slide into a team that he thinks could win next year.
Yeah.
It's a year-to-year thing. You don't want to get into a rebuild where you're just holding a place for the guy they just drafted. That would seem more of a team that's looking down the road a couple years, and he wouldn't be in that plan.
Well, and I still think, if Brady leaves New England, I think that could be an option because he knows he could go there and be competitive and win. If Drew Brees retires, are they going to stick? Are they going to re-sign Bridgewater and make Bridgewater the guy? Would Rivers be a fit there in that offense with Sean Payton? That's something you have to consider. And look, I told Teron this when you guys were downstairs. A week ago, I'm like, Drew Brees, he's not going out like that. He's coming back. He's going to play another year. You watch yesterday and you listen to Russell Wilson gives up the starting spot so Brees can start. And then he says, he's going to take a month to think about it. I mean, now I'm kind of going, maybe he's going to walk away.
All the signs, though, are pointing towards New Orleans is keeping it in-house. If Drew Brees doesn't come back, then they're keeping it in-house. They're not bringing in an outside.
But they're going Bridgewater.
Well, it's either going to be Bridgewater or Hill. I don't know why you think Hill. They love Hill.
I know they love Hill, but they love Hill and the role he's in.
No, how do you know that?
That's what I've seen. He's been the third guy on the depth chart. Then why didn't he start when Brees was hurt? Why did Bridgewater start?
I don't know that. But one of them's going to go away. They probably gave it to Bridgewater because they traded for him. But one of them's going to have to go away.
Okay, but if they love Taysom Hill so much, then it doesn't matter how you got Bridgewater. To your point, you're saying that
I'm just telling you from what I can tell, New Orleans will probably keep it in-house. If Brees retires and Bridgewater goes elsewhere – they would probably stick with Hill. I don't think they're bringing in an outsider.
Well, you may be right.
I'm just telling.
But you say I don't know. You don't know that either. That's
well, I've seen stuff. I've seen stuff out there about that. That they absolutely love Hill.
But if Tom Brady's available, you don't think they think about it? Similar to the Titans.
The question about Hill would be: Do you love him as a every down starter someday? Can you envision that or? Is he a guy that you love in his role and you'd like to use him more, as even more than you're using him? But
yeah.
You still need another quarterback in there somewhere. Is Hill your absolute – is he your quarterback? Because right now he's this brilliant super utility guy, right, who's a force in in all these areas. Could he be an actual quarterback?
Yeah.
That's a legit question. Because I can see something like a Bridgewater and Hill, where you're using Hill at quarterback more than you're using him right now. Because he's an amazing weapon. At the end of that year, I'm thinking,
he's an amazing weapon right now until he gets figured out. If he gets figured out. That's always got
to
be
in the
top of mind.
It's hard to figure him out because he might be wide receiver. He might be running the ball.
He might be blocking.
He might be blocking. He does it all.
This from Jay Glazer. Today, he tweeted this out. The Saints believe Taysom Hill is a franchise quarterback. But if Drew Brees wants to come back, they'll welcome him back with open arms. That's Jay Glazer.
Franchise quarterback.
Let me repeat. Jay Glazer today tweeted out, the Saints believe Taysom Hill is a franchise quarterback.
I've never heard that before.
Well, apparently today.
Until just now.
Until just now.
Because I just told you.
Well, that's,
does that mean is a franchise? I mean, that is interesting. If they,
Jay Glazer is saying the Saints believe he is a franchise quarterback. So, like I said,
then there you go. Then Bridgewater is going to be a free agent. That's what I take away from that.
There's a couple of coaching notes. Derek Dooley, it looks like, is going to join the New York Giants coaching staff. And LSU has apparently found their defensive coordinator.
Uh-oh.
Bo Pelini.
Bo Pelini?
Bo Pelini.
Okay.
Whoa.
That's an interesting name.
That's not the coaching news that I thought you were going to announce, because there's another one.
Bo Pelini as the new DC at LSU, per reports.
Once upon a time, he was a darn good defensive coordinator.
Well, he was the head coach at Nebraska and did a really good job.
Well,
yeah,
pretty good. Compared to some others that have come, that program has not had the success.
I was going to say, have they done any better without him?
It was one of those disappointing that they didn't do more.
How's life without Bo Pelini been?
But I see what you're saying. And how did he get the job? By being a great defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Did you see the other
coaching news? There were some issues there. Remember Pelini had some PR stuff, yelling and screaming at radio people.
Yeah. He's a psychopath. Yeah. He's crazy.
Which could be good as a defensive coordinator.
Why do you think I was saying that? Like, he's a nut job. Yeah.
The Giants have also apparently hired Freddie Kitchens to be their tight ends coach.
Oh, really?
So their coaching staff now includes this. Alan Bell tweeted this out.
Derek Dooley.
Jason Garrett, Freddie Kitchens, Derek Dooley, and Brett Bielema.
Oh, God.
And the Oklahoma Sooners have hired DeMarco Murray to be their running backs coach.
Interesting. Well, good for them. Good for DeMarco. All right, we'll come back, close out Monday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. We're live at Pete Terry's Tavern. In lieu of tonight's game, Predators and Maple Leafs. 7 o'clock puck drop, pregame at 6. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Toronto and Nashville coming off their off weeks. Now, they had practice yesterday. Good crowd out at the new Fordyce Center in Bellevue. People taking in the practice. And now they're going to have to lace them up and as I said earlier in the show, I was on 590 up in Toronto yesterday afternoon when all this was going down, and the vibe that I got from them and just my conversation with them, what I took away, they didn't say this, but what I took away was these are two teams that are in, they're kind of like mirror images of each other because they both came into the season with big expectations. Both teams have fired their well-known coaches.
Yep.
And both teams are on the outside looking in. And at this point have not been happy or pleased with their seasons. And both have more work to do. Now, Toronto's a little bit closer. I think they're 4 points out of their playoff spot. I think the East is a little bit more loaded than the West. Predators are 6 points out from a playoff spot, 7 points out from third place in the Central, but two teams that really have kind of traveled the same path to this point in the season.
I think that is an outstanding parallel. I think you're dead on. I think you're going to hear a lot about that. They both face similar challenges. I think you laid it out well. Toronto has played more games than Nashville, but they have to pass less teams to get there, but they probably have to pass better teams in some, and you could argue anyway. I still think they're one of the eight best teams in the East.
I do too.
But they're going to have to work for it, no question about it. And they're getting into that situation with their great young players and the fact that they have invested in John Tavares, that there's a lot tied up in a small amount of players. And so Right. Those players have to be great. And for the most part, they're doing well with those guys. And then where are the rest of the guys? Can they get enough? Now, they'll get a very important defenseman back in there tonight in Jake Muzzin. They're still missing their best all-around defenseman in Morgan Riley. So Riley out, Ryan Ellis still out. There's another parallel. They're each missing a key defenseman. Going another step further, both teams score enough goals to win big, but they're giving up more goals than they want to give up, that they're accustomed giving up. And it's going to be playing a better team defense that will define, I think, whether they make it or not. Frederick Anderson has been a streaky goalie. He did not have a good last month. For a while, he's a guy that can get hot and carry you. So after the break, what do you get from him? Same question is being asked of the Predators goalies, right? Neither Pekka Rinne nor Juuse Saros has been at their best, not even close, to this point in the season. Now that the break has happened, what's the goaltending story from here to the end of the year? In the 35 games, that's going to tell us a big part of how successful the Predators' stretch run will be.
Yeah, and do we know is Colton Sissons back tonight? I know
he's
still technically on IR.
He will not be in there tonight. He is getting closer. You know, he went through the conditioning stint.
But he didn't actually play any games.
No, he hasn't played a game yet. He just was able to skate and be with the team and do some drills. So he's getting there.
Right.
I think there's a chance he would play before the end of the week. But there's no chance he's in there tonight. He's not on the active roster. And Ryan Ellis, I still think he's a further away. It's still no timetable per se because of the delicacy of the concussion, right? You just don't know.
I feel like that this break, I liked the idea of having six games under John Hines and then you have the week off because, as you guys know, in anything that you do, hitting the reset button sometimes is what you need. And I know we've worried about this team in the past when they've had a long break and what they look like, but I think it was needed. I think they needed to get away from hockey for a little bit. Roman Josi went through the All-Star festivities, but everybody else was able to break away and either go on vacation or spend some time at home, whatever the case may be, but not necessarily think about everything that has transpired over the last few weeks. And I think that's beneficial. So I'm hoping that you see a change in this team, that now they can really get after it on this stretch. The schedule gets compacted, as you've talked about, Darren, and then John Hines can continue to implement his systems.
Well, we'd all like to believe that the break is going to be good. Austin Watson, who I talked to after skate this morning, you'll hear that interview in pregame, has a lot of good stuff, by the way, to say on Kobe and just the break, what it does mentally or physically, more importantly, mentally. So we'd all like to believe this is a good time, Chase, considering. But until we see how it plays out, because they had a Christmas break, they didn't come back well after. In fact, they did not come back. They were humming along. They went into the Christmas break and kaput, right, after the break. And so we'll see how they respond to that. The bottom line is they're going to have to start stringing together wins. And they got three games in the next 4 days. And they've got their two busiest months of the entire regular season coming up in February and March, where they're going to play 29 games in those 2 months. That's the most compact months of their schedule this entire year. So they're going to have to get after it. And when they close the book on month number four here Thursday night in New Jersey versus the Devils, that's going to be game 50.
Yeah.
There'll be 32 games left, okay? You get to that like 30 games left in the season, that's slim margins. Margin for error. You can't go on a three-game losing streak.
No.
Whenever you're facing what they're facing, so they're gonna have to get hot, and this week is not gonna be easy. I mean, there's only one team that hasn't been very good on their schedule, and that's New Jersey.
Yeah.
You've got a Toronto who's going to be desperate. You've got a Washington team that's good. And you've got a Vegas team here back here on Saturday night, another team that is right in the thick of things. You know, they're currently just on the cut line, above the cut line. But they haven't lived up to their expectations either. They fired their coach.
Right.
So a lot of the same themes. Teams look in the mirror and they see each other in Toronto, Vegas, and Nashville, and they're all going to play each other this week.
It's not like Nashville is the only desperate team. There's a lot of desperate teams that know they have to play their best. Everybody is going to be ramping up down the stretch here. I'm really curious to see, can their team game look close to what it did in the game against Buffalo? I heard John Hines say that. That's what he wants, right? That's what he wants every night. But after the break, it's always an X factor. Who can get back on the beam and play their team game the best? It's a bit of an X factor. Each team had one practice and a morning skate after a 9-day or however long break it's been, right? That's not easy to do. But as Darren pointed out, the last break they had, they came back and they were not themselves. They were playing great going into the break and put themselves behind the eight ball after the break.
Both teams have struggled on the penalty kill. Toronto, you better watch out if you go to the box. They're very good on the power play, so the Predators will have to be cognizant of that tonight. 7 o'clock puck drop, 6 o'clock pregame. That will do it for us. You have a great rest of your day. Stay tuned. Jared and the GM, that's next.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.